Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. I would like to ask, if you don't mind, well, first, that's not the question, but I should mention, I don't mind. Whatever it is, I promise you, I don't mind. That's why I'm here. If I get negative or unwanted thoughts, is it better to let them come? Or is it better to suppress, resist, or fight them? Well, first of all, has anyone here ever been successful at successfully repressing a thought? I mean, let's just try it. Close your eyes. Close your eyes. Everybody, close your eyes. Now, whatever you do, do not think about elephants, okay? Don't think about elephants. You can think about anything else, but don't think about elephants. No elephants. Okay. Open your eyes. Huh? What'd you think about? So, it's an interesting question because it's given options that aren't actually even options. When you try to suppress something, one of two things happens. Either you're just fantastically unsuccessful, like we are when we try to not think about an elephant, or you manage with great freneticness, with great stress, with great tension, to fill the mind with so much else that that thought doesn't arise. So the only way, for example, to not think about elephants, the only trick would be if suddenly you started doing something like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, or mathematical problems in your mind. If you filled your mind so much, you might successfully, for a few moments, be able to not have an elephant arise. But you haven't actually done anything about that. It's just a temporary suppression. And the dilemma, on a serious note, when what we are repressing and suppressing are patterns. That's what thoughts are. They're patterns. They arise. They're just going to fester inside. They're not going somewhere. They're not going anywhere. It's not like you can just somehow send it deep and it'll just go out and you'll never hear from it again. You know, like one of those beautiful rural sort of composting toilets, right? That just it's gone and then it becomes part of nature and it's just, they're beautiful. I mean, they're beautiful inventions. But that's not what we can do with our thoughts. And yet, obviously, we don't want to be overrun by them. Number one, they seem to take us places we don't want to go. Number two, it prevents us from experiencing that stillness, that spaciousness. So what we do is simply look at it, because thoughts are very quick. They're really quick. I mean, if when you practice meditation, you watch your thoughts, and you don't try to change them, but you just watch them. It's actually this very interesting mix between absolutely mortifying, I mean, it's so embarrassing, and quite humorous, because they just jump around. There's a reason that the mind is called the monkey mind. They just all over the place, no rhyme or reason. And so we simply notice it. But we don't, and this is the key, we do not jump onto it with our attention. Thoughts only become problematic when we hook our attention into them. Now, the way to think about this is, imagine that you're lying on your back on a beautiful sunny day and you're looking up at the blue sky. Now, a cloud comes. Okay, a beautiful, wispy, white cloud. It comes. There's two options. Option one is you hook your awareness and attention into the cloud and you follow it all the way across the sky. And then you keep following it and keep following it and keep following it. And then even when it's gone, you keep thinking about the cloud that went. And then you hook yourself into another one. That's one way. The other way is you keep looking at the blue sky, and for a brief moment, the cloud goes by, but you don't hook into it. You just keep focused on that blue sky, and gently the clouds will just flow by. It takes a few seconds for each one to cross your visual field. It's nothing. It's nothing. Now, with thoughts, that's the goal. What most of us do is we hook our awareness into it. So, for example, we're meditating, or we're contemplating, or we're praying, or we're writing, or we're just being in the present moment. And suddenly we smell, maybe the smell of cigarettes. Maybe someone somewhere is smoking. And it enters our nostrils. And the mind goes, oh my God, I cannot believe that person is smoking. That's so rude. Don't they know that secondhand smoke kills people? I mean, my best friend got lung cancer because her husband smoked. I lost my best friend because of her selfish husband. My God, I mean, we had told him so many times, stop smoking, smoke outside. He wouldn't. You know, husbands are like that. You know, I mean, even boyfriends are like that. Now, you see what's happened to us? Okay? There was a smell. That's all it was. The wind carried a little smell into our nostrils. And then suddenly, in a matter of just a few moments, it took me longer to tell you it than it takes the mind to do it. Suddenly, I am reliving every bad relationship I've ever had. Every man I know who didn't do what I told him to. Every relationship I've ever seen, my friends, my family on TV. And my mindfulness is gone. My heart's racing, my palms are sweating. Now, in addition to the thought, there's a whole emotional cascade. I'm reliving it. I'm angry. I'm jealous because, God, you know, on that TV show I watch, her husband is so nice. Why don't they make him like that in real life? And it's become a whole drama. My peace is gone. My mindfulness is gone. My centering is gone. All because I allowed my attention, my awareness, to hook itself into this runaway train that we call the monkey mind. And so the key is to keep the focus on that blue sky between the clouds. So, yeah, a thought arises, you notice it, but you don't jump on it. You bring the awareness back. Were you meditating? Were you engaged in conversation? Were you reading? Were you writing? Were you painting? Were you working? Were you just drinking a glass of water? Eating soup? You just bring the mind back. Bring the awareness back to the present moment. Just bring it back. Bring it back to the breath. Bring it back to right here, right now. And that becomes the way to work with our thoughts. Otherwise, we literally end up in God knows where. You know, the way that I describe thoughts a lot is that they're vehicles, and they take us places. So if I see, let's stick with my miserable female who's never had a good relationship role for a moment. Let's say I'm at a party and I'm at the party with my husband and he's talking to someone, or with my boyfriend and he's talking to someone. And suddenly I have this thought of, I bet he thinks she's prettier than I am. Okay? It's just a thought. Look at how she's flirting with him. Okay? It's just a thought. Now, I have a choice at that moment. I can bring the awareness back to my breath, to my heart center, to the fullness of who I am, to the moment in which, here in this breath, in this moment, everything is actually perfect. Or I can hook my awareness into that thought and allow it to take me on a journey of increasing jealousy into rage, into accusations, into what becomes a fight, into what becomes a miserable night, maybe a miserable few days, maybe the end of a relationship. Now, what's interesting is when I have that thought, it's not the first time. It's very rare that we actually have an original thought. Most of our thoughts tend to be the same patterns over and over again. Maybe we're more inclined toward anger, maybe more inclined toward jealousy, maybe more inclined to wanting and yearning, never enough. Maybe we're more inclined to negativity and judgment, pushing things away. We've all got our particular inclinations. And what you'll notice is that most of the thoughts are the same. But here's what's interesting. So when that thought arises of, oh, look how she's flirting. This is not the first time in my life I've had a thought of jealousy. Or a thought of anger arises. I'll show him. Not the first time you've had a thought of anger. We know where that train is going. We've gotten on it God knows how many times. And it takes us to misery. And it's so interesting because in our lives, we would never get in a vehicle going where we didn't want to go. I mean, could you imagine being at an airport and you're sitting at the gate waiting for your flight and there's a plane there already the flight before yours. And the gate agent announces, you know, last call. And you're like, well, cello, it's here. I might as well get on it. It's not going where we want to go. It doesn't matter that it's there. We're going to wait. We're not going to get on it. You're standing at a bus stop. The wrong bus goes by. You're not going to jump on. Even if the bus driver slows down, you'll just kind of namaste him and, you know, sort of wave him, thanks for slowing down, not my bus. And this is a great technique with thoughts. When they arise, especially when they're ones that you know are heading to misery, these thoughts of anger and aversion and unfulfillable desires and jealousy and resentment, and we know where they're going. As they arise, just think about it as the wrong bus, the flight that's not yours. And just a little namaste to the sweet gate agent who's looking at you to see if you want to get on, or the bus driver who slowed down. Just a little namaste. Bye. Not my thought. I'm not going there. You just bring the awareness back. Okay? We're not slaves to them. They're patterns. They're electrical, chemical patterns of activity that are due to our habits. As I said, we tend to think the same thoughts over and over. They tend to be rooted in sanskaras, our association. If you were just with someone who all they can talk about is, you know, this great new bar they've been to, and for 20 minutes they fill your ear about this great new bar, they walk away, chances are you're going to have some thoughts about going to a bar. Or you hang out with someone who all they talk about is pizza. Chances are, thoughts of pizza are going to start arising. You watch a TV show. Before going to sleep, what do you dream about? Right? You see something online. Then you go for a walk. What are you thinking about? That video you saw, the news you read. So our thoughts tend to be created by the world we surround ourselves in, which also makes it so important to really be careful. What sort of impressions are we bringing into ourselves? Most of us tend to be pretty careful about what we eat as food. Those of you from other countries traveling in India, inevitably you're very careful about the water you drink, the food you eat, right? You've been warned. So you're careful. You don't want to get sick. But are we that careful about that which is entering us through what we're listening to, what we're seeing, what's impacting our minds? The music, the movies, the social media, the TV, whatever it may be, the conversations. So be as conscious about who you have conversations with, about who you follow on social media, about what you watch on TV, as you are about what you put in your body. Because just like, you know, once you've eaten bad food, you're kind of stuck with it until it works its way out. Well, in the same way, once you've let those impressions in, you're stuck with them. Now you're stuck with a mind going places you don't want to go. You're stuck with feeling states that you don't want to be having. And in many cases, they're not even yours. Like someone has given them to you, right? We all know those wonderful well-wishers who say things like, is that your boyfriend over there? God, he's been talking to that pretty girl for a long time. Maybe you want to do something about that. Now, you weren't even thinking about it. She says, I mean, I'm just trying to be nice. Just trying to help you out. Now, where there wasn't even a thought in your mind, this person has planted the seeds, has created an impression in your mind. And this is where, if that happens, if you accidentally see something and it's, don't worry. Just immediately fill yourself with that which you do want to be thinking, with that which you do want to fill your mind with. If you don't allow yourself to jump on it with your attention, it won't last. But we have to be as careful of our mental state, our mind, as we are about the health of our bodies. It takes a lot longer to overcome the impressions of the mind than it does to overcome a tummy ache.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. So she said in psychology, they talk about hypnosis. In hypnosis, she said she's heard, you can tell someone something while they're under hypnosis, they believe it, and then they come out of hypnosis and they keep believing it, that it has changed their thought pattern. So she said, if that's true, then, bless you, then when we have criminals or terrorists, instead of locking them up, instead of beheading them or executing them in some other horrific fashion, couldn't we simply hypnotize them all so that they would believe I am a pure soul and they would stop acting in that way? So hypnosis is very powerful. It requires a few things, though. First of all, it requires the subject to be open to hypnosis. I believe it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to hypnotize someone who does not want to be hypnotized. So you need that person to be open to hypnosis, number one. Number two, it doesn't, I don't think from everything I know, work in ways that completely undo and change all of the way that you think. So they tend to use hypnosis around specific issues. For example, I smoke cigarettes. I've tried to quit smoking. I can't quit smoking. I get hypnotized. Under hypnosis, I am made to have an experience of smoking, and as I'm smoking, my lungs are catching fire, and my whole body is filling with this black, horrible mess. Or God knows what else. I mean, I guess depending on how creative the hypnotist may be, you could imagine all sorts of things. That then the person emerges from hypnosis, and now when you offer them a cigarette, they say, oh God, no. Because now they have had a very bad experience around cigarettes. Or you take someone who, for example, was, let's say, harmed as a child. And they're suffering. And they're suffering because they feel like they deserved it. There's something wrong with them. They must have done something to be the one who was harmed. You put that person under hypnosis and you have them go back to that time when they were harmed. And you, as the doctor, speak to them. So let's say, for example, that you have someone who's mother or father or brother or aunt or uncle abused them badly. Now they're suffering as an adult. Depression, anxiety, addiction, misery. You put them under hypnosis and you, as the psychologist, speak to them as the father, as the mother, as the brother, as the aunt, telling them, I'm so sorry that I hurt you. It wasn't about you. Actually, see, in those days, I was going through so much of my own struggle. You were so sweet and innocent, and I took it out on you. And that's just, I mean, one tiny little example, but that would be the sort of thing. And then when that person emerges from hypnosis, they feel a sense of closure, a sense of healing. They have heard on a deep subconscious level that voice. Alternatively, let's say someone was told when they were young, you're worthless, you're stupid, you'll never be anything. And they believe it. You put them under hypnosis and you get them to recite, to say, to know, I am worthy. I am whole. I am complete. You get them to see through why the person who said that said it, why it was a lie. They emerge from hypnosis and they are healed of that, or at least moving on the path to healing. I haven't heard of any hypnosis experiences in which someone's entire way of thinking about themselves and the world gets transformed. Because when people are terrorists, it's a whole world view. It's not like saying, I have anger problems. Bina sochke mein mar deti un logon ko. Baad mein bahut bura lagta hai. Lekin usi samay mein kuch kar nahi sakti hun. Chalo, you can work with that. But if you're dealing with someone whose entire worldview says, we are the good ones, they are the bad ones, and God has told us that God wants us to finish them. You would need somebody to walk into your clinic and say, I have a delusion. Okay? I am psychotic. I hold a belief that is absolutely untenable. I've got this crazy belief that God wants me to harm others. I've got this crazy belief that God really believes that other people, based on the color of their skin, based on their race, their religion, their sexual orientation, that God wants them to die. Can you please help me be free of this crazy idea? Then maybe, if you're very good and you've got some time and the person is really open and they stop interacting with everyone they know who believes that crazy thing, and they stop watching YouTube videos telling them that crazy thing, then you might stand a chance. But I love the idea in theory, because the truth is you've hit upon something that really is the core of truth, which is, it's just a thought. Terrorism, violence, it's just a thought. It's one thought that leads us into that action. One thought that then creates another, that creates another, that creates another, and ultimately those thoughts coalesce into an action. And so if we recognize the power of that one thought in our own lives, we may not be able to hypnotize others, but we certainly can change our own way of thinking. And so all of our own way of thinking that leads us into harm, into violence. We may not be terrorists, but are we gossiping about others? Are we saying nasty things about each other? Are we saying nasty things about ourselves? Are we telling ourselves, you're stupid, you're ugly, no one will ever love you? Are we moving through the world with what we eat, what we wear, what we buy, how we live in a way of violence, of harm? Well, it all comes from one thought. One thought. And we actually do have the power within ourselves to change that one thought. Meditation. Hypnosis. Interestingly, on a neurologic level, they found that the brain waves that we have during meditation, during hypnosis, and in the first 7 years of our lives are very similar. It's the time in which we are most open to learning, to absorbing, to forming how we think. It's why meditation changes our brain, changes our thoughts, changes how we live. It's why the vast majority of that ails us today in our own hearts and minds happened in the first 7 years of our life. Because that was the time that it went in the most deeply. If today at 50, somebody standing on a street corner says to me, you are worthless, you are horrible, I hate you, I'm going to hit you, I'm going to kill you, I'll just be like, oh God, somebody, you know, please, let's give this guy some love. Like, not too close maybe, but let's send him a lot of love from a safe distance. But I'm not going to lose sleep over the fact that some random guy thought I was worthless and horrible and wanted to harm me. But in our early childhood, someone says that to us, and it goes in very deeply, especially when it's someone we trust, a family member, a teacher, a friend, goes in very deeply. Because our brain waves at that time are very, very open. Now I've got my thinking mind that says, oh yeah, it's just the crazy guy on the corner. But when we are in meditation, when we are in hypnosis, when we are very young, that thinking mind, thankfully, at least as far as meditation goes, is not so operational. It's very nice in meditation to be free of that. It's what enables us to experience the truth. So use meditation as a way to help you change what you think. And yeah, things like hypnosis. There's a lot of beautiful psychological techniques that work with the subconscious. Because that's what it's about. It's about getting into the subconscious. When we're young, we're kind of operating as the subconscious. And in our meditation and in our hypnosis, we're back in that state. So yeah, it's a much more powerful technique to use to change yourself than to change others. But there are programs. There are programs underway in jails, in prisons, working in, you know, halfway houses and so many places. But I'll tell you lastly, the very best place to do this kind of work, schools. Before they become criminals. Before they become terrorists. Before those thoughts actually start. If we can bring teachings of, I am a pure soul, I am love, I am divine, I am one with all, into our schools. We don't need to hypnotize them. We don't even need to get them meditating if they're young enough. They're already in that state of mind. We just need to give them the right sanskaras. And that's why education is so important.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. Yes, COVID was a tragedy, an emergency. But as we've been saying from the beginning, it was also an opportunity to emerge and see. An emergency, yes, and an opportunity to emerge and see, meaning to emerge from the ignorance we were living in. We were living, we still are tragically, but somewhat less, in an illusion of separation, that somehow we've believed I can be safe over here, healthy over here, even as you are suffering and dying over there. Well, COVID came in and removed that illusion. If you're sick over there, unless I want to spend the rest of my life in the four walls of my house, behind a mask, 6 feet from everyone, having to order my groceries online, Well, I need you to be healthy for me to be healthy. I need you to be safe for me to be safe. It wiped away all illusions. I mean, before COVID, did we really care what people were eating in meat markets in central China? Well, did it really matter to us? We might hear someone say, oh, they ate this, they ate that. And we'd say, ugh. But it wasn't like a big thing. Nobody felt like that was something that impacted them. Now we know what everyone's eating, where they're eating it, how they're eating it, actually ripples out all over the world. And that's not just the meat market in central China. That was the example COVID gave us. But our eating habits, if we're eating non-vegetarian food, you can be sure the ripple impact of your diet is rippling into all across so much of the world where people are dying of starvation without enough food. So COVID really gave us that opportunity to emerge from ignorance, emerge from separation and to see. So beautiful. Here we were in lockdown, government imposed lockdown for 4 or 5 months. It was so quiet, so clean. I don't think Ganga's been that clean in hundreds of years. The elephants were coming out of the jungle and bathing in Ganga. The CCTV cameras caught elephants at Harkipoti and Haridwar, Socho. Nobody was there. The animals all came out of the forest. It was beautiful. I mean, we missed you all, but it was beautiful. Carbon emissions were down. The air was clean. There was no pollution. And it made us realize without any doubt whatsoever, we are the problem. Because before COVID, there was, you know, I mean, most of us realized we are the problem, but there was some vested interests, shall we say, in some other sectors who wanted to pretend we were not the problem. Industry wasn't the problem. Transportation wasn't the problem. Our lifestyles weren't the problem. Well, this was as clear-cut of a scientific experiment as you could have possibly ever imagined. All at once, everything stopped. And what happened? The air got cleaner, the water got cleaner, carbon emissions were down. So it taught us we are the problem. And therefore, we are the solution. And so while the deaths were horrific and tragic, and I wish that there had been some way to prevent them, the ultimate lesson from COVID, I think, has actually been a really powerful one. I think people now take their health a lot more seriously. I think people recognize the preciousness of life. It was this big fat slap in the face to everybody of like, oh, you thought that was important? Well, now your mail could kill you, right? Remember those first few weeks of COVID? Nobody would touch their mail. I mean, we were terrified. Some letter came, it was like, oh, I don't want to touch. Nobody wanted to touch anything. Suddenly we realized what's important, our loved ones, our life, helping others. And so actually, ultimately, I think it's been a really powerful lesson. So to me, the future, I feel very bright about it because I have faith in humanity. It's not a sure thing. It's not a sure thing. Now, of course, that is with an attachment to our present existence in these forms as humans, if we let go of that attachment, well then, I mean, the Earth is going to survive. Regardless of climate change, regardless of what happens, Mother Earth will survive. It's us who won't. So as long as we are attached to our current existence as human beings who depend upon certain amount of oxygen in the air, certain temperature range, well, then we better be careful. But I've got a lot of faith in humanity. And I actually think that that which is happening, whether it's COVID, whether it's an absolutely unwarranted, tragic, horrific war, it's making people rise up. Remember, in the last few years, in addition to all of this, as we were being catalyzed, you could say, in the pandemic, all of the movements around equality, whether equality of color, equality of race, equality of gender, all of these huge movements have started coming all over the world in fantastic ways. The ability to discriminate against others on the basis of their color, their race, their religion, their gender, their sexual orientation. Suddenly there have been huge movements against that. Catalyzed maybe by us recognizing the fragility of life in the pandemic, I don't know. But it's been an incredibly powerful and positive time. I think we're looking at things in entirely new ways. And I think that's a great thing. I think we are realizing that a lot that we used to take for granted, we can't take for granted anymore. So I think the future is actually really bright. I just pray that we act fast to preserve this very fragile ecosystem that we require for our ongoing spiritual evolution. But I think it will happen. We're seeing it every day. We're seeing so many people come forward for peace, for the environment, for equality, for others. And it's beautiful to see. And remember, you are part of that future. Your thoughts, your actions, your words, your social media posts, each one of us is creating that future. It's not that we sit here and the future is just going to happen. We are creating it. And so it's up to each of us. We are the future. When we talk about something being predestined, well, right now is the pre of tomorrow's destiny. What our destiny will be a year from now, 10 years from now, an hour from now, we are writing it right now. So let us co-create the world we know we're supposed to live in. Because we can, if we do it together.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. In your story, you are envisioning that we are really the ones with the power to give life to the tiger or life to the horse. And this is that great illusion that Lord Krishna dispels in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. When Arjuna says, I can't fight, I'll kill them. Bhagavan Krishna basically says, oh really? Oh really? Since when have you become the one who decides who lives and who dies? Since when have you become the one with the power to take life? That's not you, that's me. And in the same way, recognize, of course, that yes, we have to act according to integrity, according to our values, our ethics, our spiritual precepts, but also to recognize that ultimately all of nature is not in our shoulders, especially a situation like this. Most of us would tend to vote for the horse in the same way that when we watch, you know, National Geographic movies and the lion is running after zebras, we always vote for the zebras. I mean, it's just natural. I've never met anyone who's like, yeah, get him. And you'd worry if you did. And that's natural. It's beautiful. It's sort of in alignment with our spiritual and our social understanding that we should help those who are the underdog. We love it. We love it when in football games, boxing matches, the underdog wins. Right? We always love that. And that's great. It's an aspect of our personality, our culture that says, okay, the one who is weaker, we should help them. In the case of the horse and the tiger, we actually can help them by lying to the tiger. In the case of the lion and the zebras or random sports teams, obviously we can't do anything. But we do seem to think that, you know, cheering and rooting and yelling at the TV screen gives them at least in some way our energy, our blessings. And I think that's beautiful. I think giving whatever power we have to the weak is a beautiful aspect of our compassionate, loving, caring personalities. But don't allow yourself to get wrapped up in the ego of, oh yeah, I'm the one who saved that horse. Oh yeah, I yelled at the screen so the zebra got away, like she could hear me. It's not up to us. We do what we can do. We act in alignment every minute and every moment with our core values, the best we can do. Knowing, of course, that there's a divine plan in all of this and it's going to unfold.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.